The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gotham Undercover. I'm Karen, the Scarlet Cougar.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
And we're part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. This is episode 63.
Woohoo!
We're getting up there.
Yeah, and we're talking about Light the Wick. And we've been assembling bombs around this season of Gotham, and so now the wick to those bombs head has been lit.
Yeah, and it's gonna be a slow burn. I mean, we don't have many episodes left, but it's definitely not gonna be a quick explosion.
Right. Exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah. And this episode was written by Zee Chun, who wrote Blood Rush earlier in the season and has been an executive story or editor this season for Gotham. And she's done some writing on Once Upon a Time. And the director is Mark Tondorey, I guess is how you say the last name. Yeah, who's done writing on 12 Monkeys, which starts back tonight.
I know, I'm so excited.
And also on Lucifer, so.
Yeah, I'm not happy that they're burning them off, but.
I've talked about this online. I think my gold standard was lost because everybody got to come together and theorize on podcast and share their thoughts. And it just kind of, the whole binge idea, it makes it hard, especially, you know, for podcasters to involve the audience and for people to really feel like they have a say when, you know, the next episode's out there and there's no reason to speculate when you can just watch. So,
right. Yeah, they're doing four tonight and then three tomorrow night and three the next night.
Three Sunday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Indeed.
It's like they just want to get it off their plate.
Yeah, but, you know, I would understand if it was really, truly in the summer.
Right.
Where it be a summer event.
Right.
But this weekend, it just feels like, okay, we're still in May. Yes, we're in sweeps, so I kind of understand that. But
yeah,
I just don't know. But
it's not like they want ratings for it. This is it for 12 Monkeys, right?
No, there's a next season.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's
so this
a next
is a stunty sort of thing.
Right, and we don't know if next season will be the same format or not, but you can go over to 12 Monkeys Uncaged, our sister podcast here on the network, and check out all the details, because I think they've got an interview coming up in the next day or two with the creator, and so maybe some insight coming out on that.
Right, and I saw they have a bunch of posts all lined up on the site ready to go for mm-hmm. their podcast, so they're ready to talk about each episode. And I have to say this right now.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
But I do want to plug them because they are going to be working overtime this weekend to get these podcasts out. So I really appreciate them for doing that. And
indeed,
it's a great show. So if you haven't checked it out, it's a little too late right now to binge the prior seasons in order to watch tonight's episodes, but it's a great show. So
yeah, but they have said even with that it would be possible if you watch tonight to be able to get the gist of a lot of things without having to go back. So yeah, so we'll see.
So you could start tonight.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So what did we give this episode of Gotham?
I gave it 8.5 airborne Alish Tesh viruses.
Scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in that big room.
Yeah.
That bank. I gave it 8 magic needles. Like the, I guess he's playing sort of a monkish figure.
Yeah, the shaman into, there. Yeah.
Pushes into Bruce's head.
Yeah.
Ooh, and his eyes go all white. Crazy town.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And my discussion points are strangely playing both sides. waking up to destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Waking up. Because he's thinking about his parents' wake. Sirens, the next generation. With Ivy and Selena.
Mm-hmm.
The Odd Couple. They're neighbors again. Ed and Oswald. Leaving again.
Uh-huh.
And the Bane of the Barnes. Come out into the night, Batman.
I was born into the darkness.
Someone's looking a little bit like Bane. Proto-Bane.
Yeah.
Since we have proto-everybody in this episode.
Exactly.
Okay, so I want to start actually with Selena and Ivy, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, because we left off with her on the ground after Five mm-hmm. had pushed her out the window with a cat coming up to her. And thank goodness we don't have the supernatural element of the cats reviving her, right?
Yeah, we don't have that aspect of, you know, the genre.
Right. We simply have the homeopathic remedies that Ivy has concocted.
Well, she's doing pretty good. She's 2 for 2. She's brought both the penguin and Selena back from the brink these last few episodes. Mm-hmm. So she's doing pretty good.
Yep. She does some nice what do you call it? Horticulture. Isn't that what that's called? And I love how she does it too. She tells people with her perfume, you know, what to do. Which is mm-hmm. great. She can order them around. And she brings in these plants. She orders these nurses to help her bring these plants in. And she's waking Selena up. And by the time she wakes Selena up, these plants have magically grown to fill the entire room.
I know. It's like a greenhouse in that
I know. It's amazing.
Room.
It's amazing. So, I mean, green thumb. I mean, her whole hand is green, apparently.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And Selena wakes up after the nurse has said that they were just trying to keep her comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and mind you, I thought, hello, yes, I know it's a show and they don't want to do this, but keeping her comfortable with just an air tube in her nose? No, she would have to be on a vent, right?
In real life. Yeah, probably. But, you know, we don't know how it may not gotten to the point where she'd stopped breathing on her own. I just don't know. But, yeah, I mean, it makes it sound the nurse or doctor, whoever, makes it seem like it's worse than it actually looks. But right. I guess, you know, the power of TV, you've got to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to make her look like she's not dying for reals.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, it was just something that struck me when I was watching it. Okay, she looks pretty good for someone who is being made, quote unquote, comfortable. But that it works out because then as soon as she wakes up, she can just pull everything off and get out of the bed and tell Ivy, I've got to go kill someone, which I love because immediately, you know, she remembers her last statement is, you know, well, I'm going to tell Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
And Five, of course, that was his impetus to push her out the window because he can't have that.
Exactly. I really appreciate that we don't have that memory loss there, that this is going to be that next step, that she's going to go and give Five what for.
Yeah. And no matter what happens at the mansion, he's going to get outed, is feeling at least. She's going to either tell Alfred or confront Five or do something. He's not going to be able to stop her this time because the show wouldn't do that to us, right? I mean, I have a feeling that it's coming to a head now.
Yeah, it's going to come to a head. And that's the curious thing. I'm not sure if it's going to be next episode or the episode after. It's just the pictures that we've seen Don't give a ton of info there, but it's going to be coming to a head.
They don't want to give us all that info.
Right.
So they don't want to spoil stuff. And I have a feeling now, you know, Selena and Alfred have a very tenuous relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But Alfred already has his suspicions about this fake Bruce.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this might actually kind of bring them a little closer.
Yeah.
Because she'll go there in order to confront Five, to say that he's fake, to maybe tell Alfred. And this will, you know, give a little more respect in Alfred's mind to her, that she knew just by talking to him that he wasn't Bruce.
Exactly.
And I think Alfred will recognize that she has true feelings for Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So that will be wonderful, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He needs her. Bruce needs her. So Alfred kind of has to grudgingly like her, at least.
Right.
Off and on, you know, they have that relationship through his adult life. Mm-hmm. And when she shows up at the mansion, he can't just stick a knife in her and and do away with her. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to this? Oh, yeah. And Ivy goes to Sirens.
Yeah.
To ask about Selena.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering at this point whether at some distant future they will become a part of that girls club.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see them kind of break away, and because it would give them enough autonomy to be who they really are and not be so structured like under different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to be structured. You know, my only question is how is the Babs and Tabs? We've got to see how they're going to work out, because that's a tension that was raised in the last episode.
Right.
So, you know, who's going to be involved? So, you know, maybe Tabs moves out and Selena and Ivy come in and, you know, are there with Babs for a little while. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, but I could definitely see it.
I could too, especially since they already have that relationship with Babs from when they were staying with her back before she was Stabby Babs. So yeah, I think there is an opportunity there to bring them in to that women empowered relationship where they can actually still be on that other side of the law, but also be somewhat legitimate by joining up with the Sirens. And they've kind of dropped that hint by letting Ivy go into the bar and talk to Tabs. So.
Yeah.
All right. That's why I named it Sirens, the Next Generation. Leaving again, I want to talk about as well. Lee, worst Emmy ever.
It's frustrating because I've enjoyed her character, but I've been frustrated by how it's been written.
Me too.
And yeah, everybody's keeping her out. And I'm like, okay, understand that they may be doing that to protect her, but I just feel like it was needless. I mean, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I'm happy that Jim actually says, hey, listen, I did it. I was protecting you. Get over it, finally.
Yeah, that was a nice conversation.
But I'm still, I'm frustrated here because it's like just how she's been written. I'm just, I'm not happy with the way that it's working.
Shouldn't she realize that from her visit with Barnes? I mean, they even flashed back to it in the, you know, previously on Gotham, where she visits with Barnes and Barnes really terrifies her in his executioner form. And she should have realized that Mario had changed as well.
Right. But she does, but she realizes that she's blaming Jim for everything. Because in that scene at the end, she says, yes, he was poisoned with her blood because the Hatter was trying to get back at you.
Right.
You know, everything is about – she's a woman that right – the way that it's written right now, she's a woman that doesn't feel like she has a place. She's not grounded in any way. You know, she was looking forward to this new married life. That's been stripped away. Everybody that she was around before seems to be keeping secrets from her. And the only person that she really has that she can point that blame at is Jim. And I'm just I'm frustrated. I see what they're maybe trying to do, but I just don't appreciate it. I don't feel like that's the – I think you've got this strong character who we got to see last season and was on top of things, and now it just seems like, okay, we've got to shoehorn in plot points, so let's throw in some Lee here, and right. I don't know. Yeah.
I agree, and it's out of character for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is the major problem for me. And the fact that she would actually put on her report that it's a homicide when it's clearly not a homicide, which is really unprofessional of her.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing it to bait them, and she would never do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I am thinking that this is not the Lee that we know.
Yeah.
Even if she is mourning and just miserable over the whole thing, she was the one that came back to work there.
Yeah.
She could have left if she was that miserable. She doesn't have to be around him anymore.
Right. This is one example, and thankfully it's not true to the series overall, but because of the writing, it's just one of those situations where I don't know that they're falling down on maybe the continuity or trying to shape things where the writer's room is letting us down a little. And so, you know, it's frustrating. I mean, in season one, we had the frustration of Babs.
Right.
And them not knowing how to write her or whatever, but this is just frustrating. Yeah. So
can he date anyone without ruining them?
That's what it seems like. And, you know, I don't know.
I read a recap where someone said, "Wouldn't it be interesting if she's the one who turned into Harley Quinn because she's a doctor?"
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Someone said that, and I was like, interesting. If she became a supervillain instead of, you know, just fading away into the background, if they made her into our proto Harley Quinn.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, me either. But right now, she is very disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, get over yourself. He saved your life, you know, please give him a bit of a pass. So there's that. What should we talk about next? Let's talk about Bruce next.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So Bruce. Wow.
Yeah. So he's getting, I like the fact that he's getting both physical and this mental training both. That they're doing both, that they're not just doing one side of the coin. But wow, talking about manipulative, we really learn a whole lot more about the shaman in this episode because the way that at the end when he is talking to Catherine, he's in charge.
Right.
Because she's addressing him as sir and getting he's laying out the details and the plan. So it's interesting to see, okay, this is one level up from her.
Mm-hmm.
And
so he's in charge of the court.
Right. And he is crafting, you know, we've talked about this the last two episodes, the weapon coming in, the weapon. Well, we'll get to it later, but the virus may be a part, but really I think what they're doing is they're making Bruce into the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're prepping to bring the weapon back to Gotham. He has manipulated Bruce to try to free himself from emotions. And he's saying that, no, emotions aren't going to help you. It's not going to make you fight stronger. It's only going to distract you. And he's using that in to convince him to lock away those emotions. I like that vision of, you know, really walking out at that wake. The reason you left and ran away from the wake is because everybody was talking about you and not being mad that your parents were dead, because it calls back to that sense of justice that Bruce has, that we got to see in the book and looking at that. But he is, you know, told to lock it up by locking up those cufflinks he was going to give to his dad. And man, you know, he gave to his dad. And so it's just interesting how Bruce is being manipulated and kind of getting a bigger picture of maybe what the shaman's game is.
I know. So, I mean, is he in charge of the court and you know, is it's so many things. We know he's not Roz.
No. And so you're left asking is Roz a competing faction that's going to come in and attack this group headed by the shaman and the owls? Or is he one level up from the shaman? He's in charge of the shaman. So we still got all these questions about, how everybody's going to play into things.
Right.
So.
And he, of course, he's doing things differently than how the League of Shadows would do it. They would want him to channel that anger. They wouldn't want him to push the anger down, because we know that, when he's Batman, he channels his anger. He uses his anger.
Right, exactly.
He doesn't forget his anger. So whatever they're doing to him here is not how he becomes Batman.
No.
Now the discipline that he's being shown here might play a part in that.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I can definitely see, like we've talked about before, him taking aspects of this training, just like he's taken aspects of the training that he's got from Alfred, and adapting them into his character and who he will be as, you know, as Batman. Because Batman is not just, you know, the lead training, and he's not just the detective training, and he's not just this or that. He is the sum of all those things coming together into this one person and making it work. So he's moved, you know, he's learned from all those things, but made his own character. And so it will be interesting to see how he takes this and says, well, you were trying to use this, but I can adapt some of these things to what I want to do.
Right. And I do think there might be some healthy things that come out of this.
Oh, sure.
Where he is forced to face these memories.
I totally agree. I think the fact that in the last time we saw him with the shaman, where he's had to go beyond the point of just living in the moment of his parents' death and making action to try to break out of that. And then in this episode, to kind of really look at his motivations and why he does things, he's definitely using these things to move forward. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think he's been stuck there.
Mm-hmm,
at least part of him has been stuck there. And I think this maybe will help him to move on from that. And so it's healthy, even though he's being taught to leave that completely behind. I think at some point he's going to be drawn out of that mindset and he will leave the hurt part of Bruce behind and learn to channel the anger part of it into a sense of justice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what Batman's all about. So I think the discipline and the channeling and all that, of course, the fighting will help mm-hmm. as well. I like yeah. that he was training with the, it's not bow sticks because they were shorter, but the whatever he was doing, the martial art training that he was yeah. doing there mm-hmm. is very helpful. However, the shaman is definitely more than he appears, and there's something very sinister about him. So,
And goodness gracious, Raymond Barry just knocking it out of the park. I really like the way his voice, the way he's using his voice. And he's got a good command on the kind of the accent and the way that he talks. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to once again kind of contrast that with being Raylan Givens' dad on Justified,
right.
You know, being from, you know, West Virginia and being this, you know, homegrown guy, and, you know, to see him as this, you know, this shaman character, but just the force of his words and how he puts things. It's really cool to see the way that actors do that. I don't know. Did you get to see King Charles III on PBS that mm-hmm. came out this past?
I didn't.
Well, it's adapted from a play, and the author of the play purposely wrote it in blank verse, so it sounds like Shakespeare without using Shakespearean language.
Okay.
So the emphasis is on the alliteration and how things are strung together and the phrasing. And so I, after watching that Sunday and then listening to Raymond in this episode, I was really more cognizant of how he was forcing those words and using those to really break through in Bruce's, in the midst of, you know, you've got this wild fight going on, and he is forcefully using his words as these hits are coming against Bruce. So I really appreciated the writing and the directing of how they did that in this episode.
I agree. Not just that, but he was in the 100 as well. And he also played, it's funny, but in New Girl, the character of Nick meets an older version of himself, and he plays the older version of Nick. And he's hilarious as the older version of Nick, where he tells him he has to wise up and you know, become an adult and learn to do things, like, you know, be more responsible and things like that. So it's funny. And then he goes outside and he goes to sleep in an alley like a homeless person, which, you know, it's very funny. And I love that actor. So he's very versatile, playing that, you know, comedic role and then being in a genre show. And then, of course, like you said, on Justified, that is just, you know, a straight drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, playing this shaman, the shadowy figure that is very mystical. And again, it's a genre show, but he's not playing a sci-fi character per se.
No, it's you know, it's interesting once again to kind of contrast how he talks with Bruce and how he talks with Catherine. And mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Yeah. So
he talks very, very, oh, hello, Bruce. You know, he's very, very mystical, like, you know, that kind of, let's do this, let's do that. And then he talks to Catherine, and it's just a whole different cadence. And yes, I think we have him. You know, he's not light like that, but he's, you know, menacing, and it's just a complete different tone with her. So yeah, he's great. I love the choice of him. Like, you know, we've said this over and over, the casting on this show is unexpected but amazing.
Yeah, I, you know, it's so good because they pull in these characters, these actors who are very experienced and strong, and they give them, you know, direction. And they let them run with stuff, and it's very cool to see that, because, you know, while they may be in there for several episodes, not the full season, they make the most of it without really just being a guest shot, you know, for the heck of it, just to bring in ratings. I mean, it's they're there for a purpose and they do a good job. And, you know, it's cool to see.
I agree. Now we find out Catherine's last name in this episode, which is Monroe.
Yep.
And I looked it up. I couldn't find anything about the Monroe family.
Okay.
So I have no idea. I probably will go into deeper archives later on just to see. It was just a scan of
right.
it. But she must be part of a founding family of Gotham.
Yeah.
And I like that he found where she lives and went to her house. However, he needed to be a little neater because she does find out that James was in her house.
Well, I mean, I thought it was quite when she's coming in and he knows, instead of hiding, he's pretty brash.
Yeah.
To just stand out there and, you know, talk with her and lead in about Penguin and those type of things, and to talk about, you know, that he wants in on the information. I thought that was smart of him, because I mean, if he was caught hiding, then he would immediately been kicked out. But, you know, once again, he didn't get a chance to put everything back exactly like he left it. And she's very observant that way. And I mean, she doesn't even have to look to see. I mean, she just sees that drawer is pulled out just the barest little bit. And she's like, okay, I know what's up.
Now I know why James was here.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it is a little odd that he showed up at her house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he plays it off like, I need, you know, you let me in, I need to know what this thing is, what this cleansing is that you're doing.
Yeah.
And of course, that leads to the strangely playing both sides thing.
Yeah. So it's interesting because the court is suspending all activities prior to this, you know, this event going on, this cleansing, and they're asked to put down on a list, and we find out later the list is people and loved ones to be spared.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of his detective work, Jim is, you know, the guy comes in, one of the other members, and he plays it off like he's, you know, needs to put down a name. And so for me, it looks like he wrote down a name.
Right. Just but one.
To me, looked like he started off with an L to me. So.
Yeah, it kind of did. I wish he had put down Harvey.
Yeah.
That would have been my pick, personally,
yeah.
Partner. But, or Bruce even. Come on.
Well, but I don't know if he knows that they have Bruce. I don't think he knows that they have Bruce.
He has no idea. He hasn't seen Bruce in a while.
But, yeah, I don't know. That might be a little raising some triggers there,
that's
maybe
true.
Because he may have an inkling into the fact that they had something to do with his parents' death, but who knows?
Right. Yeah, well, he knows that they know all the powerful families in town.
Right,
so
right.
So they wouldn't know anything about Lee or Harvey or any of that. Or at least, you know, their backgrounds. They wouldn't, they're not founding members of the town.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, who knows who he put down? I'm guessing Lee as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, so that leads to her explaining that there is this vial of tetch virus that can be weaponized into a mist. She takes him to a Daughters of the Revolution type party.
You know, a debutante ball type thing.
And it's, you know, founding members of Gotham type thing where their daughters all come together and have a little gathering. And she's going to let this virus free in the room for them to all take it in and go crazy.
Yeah, I have a test of the how they think the virus is distributed and air put out into the air.
Right. And hilarity will ensue, I guess. I mean, and her test is to leave James there with a talon.
Right.
And if he just stands there and watches, she knows that he will be loyal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. and he really is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place where he obviously doesn't want to be killed by this talon.
No.
But he cannot, in good conscience, let all those girls be affected by the Tetch virus.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now he has a weapon that he can use, even though he's handed over his gun and his phone.
And his phone, right. But not the other phone.
He has Oswald's phone, who approached him earlier in the episode to take him to the court. Mm-hmm. And he gave him this phone and said, call me. I'm the only number in this phone. Call me and take me to the court. Because we're friends. Of course, that friendship was punctuated by Firefly standing there in the background with her flaming gun. So there was a bit of pressure there. And he calls Penguin surreptitiously on the down low.
Yeah, I love that.
I know, that was great. And he kind of gives away where they are. You know, he mentions they're at the old bank. And, you know, I guess Oswald figures out where they are. But it's not like he gets there right away. But he does manage to get there at some point. Not before our good man James has figured out how to stop everything from happening. And everything comes together right at the last moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes right through the window after Firefly has set the talon on fire.
Yeah, he yells for everybody to get out and then goes down. And at first I'm like, okay, people, I know you're in this busy social setting, but right beside the coffee pot, there's this big thing with a timer on it counting down.
Get out. I'm like, it looks like a bomb.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
So dumb.
And then, so he's down there and he's shutting these doors. And I'm like, at first I'm like, and the purpose for these doors? Because at first I'm thinking those things are just grates, not doors. And then you can kind of see that there is glass behind it. So I'm like, okay, but you know,
they're solid.
So,
and it is a mist,
right?
So I'm assuming that they're not gonna be able to get through those doors, and he just barely made it.
Yeah, well, and so now the owls are down two talons.
Yep, that's true. And there was only three, at least that we saw so far. So she better have some more talons up her sleeve. That's all I'm saying.
Wake another one up.
Yeah. Well, and we know five is not long for this world unless Strange can come up with some way to save him. Because we know that he is part of Catherine's organization, kind of being forced to work for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing it's just hey, work for me or I kill you sort of thing.
Mm.
The Alice Tetch virus, the knowledge of this leads James and Harvey to Lucius and the badge that James got from Catherine's house.
Yeah.
And Lucius decides that there's only one place, one offsite, main industries building that they could be using. They track Strange down to that building, and lo and behold, there he is with a Tetch vampire. And he decides he's going to hand over the information on his aerosol virus plus a vial of it in order to work with James and Harvey on the good side but he's still gonna stay in good stead with Catherine and the Court of Owls just in case, because whoever comes out on top, he's gonna stick with them.
Exactly. He's dealt with them enough to know, okay, I better play it safe.
Yeah. So, you know, I love that Harvey is pretty funny with the quips. He says, "You logical bastard."
And he starts to arrest him and, you know, is trying to list his crimes. He says, "Oh, you know."
Right, I know. It's so funny. He says, "I'm arresting you for this, this, and oh, you know what I'm arresting you for." It's so funny. He is out of patience completely with Strange. But of course they let him stay, because if they take him, then the gig is up.
Yeah.
And I know it's the jig is up, but it's a gig, essentially, for Strange.
Yeah.
So they leave him there in order to keep working for the Court of Owls, so that and James thinks that this is to keep his position safe. Unbeknownst to him, Catherine, of course, realizes that he has been in her house and has stolen that badge.
Right, right.
Yeah, not so good.
No.
Right. In the meantime, of course, Catherine manages to get her hands on Oswald.
Yeah. So Firefly gets taken out and Oswald is complaining, "Where is everybody?" And another Talon.
That's right. The one that's left.
Yeah. Locks him up in appropriately a giant birdcage.
Yep. Yep.
So the penguin is jailed, and who's his next door neighbor?
Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the person he was looking for, though.
Yeah.
He's been looking for him. Like,
fortunately, Ed can get out of choking range.
Right. Now, I don't know what Ed was trying to accomplish by standing there and innocently saying, "Oswald?" I mean, I know he's surprised that he's alive.
Right.
But he looked not just stunned, but kind of, "Wow, hi, it's nice to see you." I mean, he almost looked like he was trying to reconcile with him, right?
Yeah, but
did you get that vibe?
I think, and this is a little bit spoilerish, but I mean, he's a smart guy, and he's going to have to realize that, okay, I'm trapped in this cage by myself, and I was told one thing. That's not happening. And so I'm not in charge. I don't have any leverage with the Owls now. But here is somebody with the two of us that we can maybe work a way to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. But how receptive is Oswald going to be to that?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, you know,
we will see. Now, Oswald does have his crew still. So who knows what's going to happen with that? They do have motivation to come and get him.
Mm-hmm.
Because without him, they're not going to get what they want.
Exactly.
So they may actually come after him. And now, knowing that James is trying to frame the court, he also may be on the other side and may try to rescue them as well.
Yeah, that's so true. It's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out.
Right. Now, in the beginning of this episode, someone is being transferred, and I put air quotes around that, to another prison. And we get a cameo from the Mad Hatter, Jarvis Ketch.
Yeah, I love it, because we get an on-screen narrator.
I know.
It was so cool.
It's great. Now, I didn't know this, but apparently they allow you to wear your own hat in prison.
If you make it, I guess you can wear it. I mean, you know.
It's pretty cool. So he's standing there in his Mad Hatter hat, looking out the bars and seeing that Barnes in his, I guess it's kind of a Silence of the Lambs type get up, is being taken to a paddy wagon. And there is a Talon on top of the wagon, and he intercepts them, and Barnes takes out one of the guards and scares away the other one. And the Talon takes him away. So the Court of Owls would like him to work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see him again till later in the episode, where Catherine has tasked him with taking down James.
Yeah, earlier in the episode, she's talking with him and talking about, you know, needing him and this judgment that's coming, and he's all about that. But yep. They're like, oh, we want to do it on a little wider scale. Mm-hmm. But she's, you know, once again, she's realized, okay, this is a tool that I can use to get rid of James and make it, you know, so that I can concern myself with the bigger picture, just release Barnes against him. So, right. Yeah.
Using my minions.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, he looks a lot like Bane. she's put him in a Talon-like outfit, but kept the mask on, I guess, in order to protect everybody from him.
Yeah, that's like a mask that keeps you from being able to spit, so that you can't, you know, he couldn't bite his lip and then spit the blood into their faces or whatever, right. And infect them. So, right. Yeah.
So she's keeping herself and her crew safe. And I'm guessing he's going to continue to wear that. He looks pretty badass. And I'd be a little scared. I think I'd run away. So James is probably going to be a little intimidated, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And
Harvey's going to have some quips. We'll see what happens. He's going to confront them at some point very soon, and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. So, did I miss anything?
No, I think we got it.
Okay, good. And I cannot wait to see what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know what that sound means?
Meanwhile, in the feedback section of the show notes.
Why don't you take the first one?
Okay, so we got some feedback from Alexander, and he says, I'm late to the party, but I thought the Gotham Dawn of Darkness book was pretty awesome. Many fans complained that we should have spent a few episodes with the Waynes before they were killed off, and in a sense, this novel fulfills that wish. We got some much-wanted background on two of the most compelling supporting characters, Alfred and Harvey Bullock. Bonus points for implying that Harvey fought in World War I. The book was great, and I'm hoping for some of this material carries over into seasons 3 and 4.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thanks definitely. For that feedback. I love that someone else picked up the book and read it, because it's worth reading to get that background information. Definitely. Especially if you like Gotham, because it is kind of a prequel to Batman becoming Batman, and we also learn a lot about his father, Thomas Wayne, which is amazing, and his bond with Alfred, and also Bruce's bond with Alfred.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's a really good one that gives a lot of depth to what we're seeing here in the seasons. Yeah.
Yep, and some Court of Owls as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So that.
And we got a feedback from Chris, and it's always nice to hear from Chris. He says, hi, guys. Somehow I managed to squeeze in Gotham between my stepson's honors choir performance. Congratulations, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
His final prep for Shrek Jr. as Lord Farquaad, and his birthday party planning. So here we go. I'm beginning to question just how good of a medical examiner Lee is. All I'm saying is you never see Ducky on NCIS think a suicide is a homicide unless some really exotic poison was involved. I know, suspension of disbelief. Okay, I'm going to interject here. I agree with you. 100%.
Yeah,
I brought it up before. I hadn't read this yet, but I agree. It's unprofessional.
Yeah. The only point they did say last episode that the she knew that the bullet was switched out and mob, that's a mob technique, but still,
she still should have written suicide on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there was nothing really indicating that it was right. A homicide.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, back to the feedback. Oh, no, they said the F word and not the one or two that Gordon Ramsay is known for. And it's fish. They said fish.
Yeah.
I share Hugo's opinion of people hovering over me while I work. Me too. I've yelled at my husband about that. He shares this quote. Yes, I'm quite hard to kill. The way she stood in the background holding the flamethrower, Firefly reminded me of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Nice.
Kind of reminiscent of that. The cleansing of Gotham reminds me of the plot of Arkham Knight. Just substitute Scarecrow and his fear toxin for the court and the virus.
Interesting. Yeah.
Some more little throwback memories. I just noticed that Bruce's eyes turn white and look like Batman's under the cowl when the shaman uses the acupuncture dart on him. Yeah, they do turn completely white.
Yeah.
Interesting callback to the killing joke. The shaman telling Bruce to lock his memories away is like when the Joker tells Batman that madness is the emergency exit because you can just close the door and lock all the bad memories away forever.
Ooh, wow. Getting deep there. That's wow.
I know, right?
Cool, Chris.
You're under arrest for attempts to weaponize a viral... Oh, you know why. You logical bastard. He pulled that out too. The trope of the crying child being left behind has been done several times, but it works on me every time. Mm. Me too, Chris. Great scene between Robin and Corey. They said so much with very few words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're reaching out through the bars and everything. Yep. As I said, when Jeff posted the photo of Barnes, he looked like a Sith Lord at the end. He also reminded me of Bane. And coincidentally, there is a character in the Star Wars novels named Darth Bane. It's so nice when two geekdoms come together. He finishes with another solid episode this week. Bullock redeemed himself from his boneheadedness last week. Sorry, Karen. It's true, lol. But Lee. If someone like Lucius Fox tells you not everything is as it seems, everything is not as it seems. I give this episode 8 out of 10 Ivy's miracle healing plants. Thank you, Chris.
Nice. Thanks, Chris.
And if you would like to leave feedback like this good people, listen to this.
To get your feedback in like these good folks, please get it to us by Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can leave a text file, you can attach an audio file, you can use the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can simply email us at feedback@goldenspiralmedia.com. Follow the show on Twitter at GothamGSM. And to subscribe or leave your 5-star reviews for this or any other Golden Spiral Media podcast, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. Now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I love that he does that for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends our feedback section. And we're on with the news.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to read the preview for the next episode?
Sure. Tipple Shaman reveals his hand to Bruce Wayne and sets up the next phase of training. Gordon and Bullock are pulled into danger as they come across a crystal owl that reveals some of the most coveted secrets of Gotham's underworld. So I gotta stop there. So there's another owl other than the one that was broken
by it.
Jerome.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile.
Hold on. I had to do it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Enigma and Penguin are forced to work together to get out of a tricky situation on an all-new Heroes Rise, All Will Be Judged episode of Gotham, airing Monday, May 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
All Will Be definitely. Judged.
And once again, the promo pictures are up for this episode and the following episode in the Facebook group, so check them out.
Yes. And then after that comes the finale, which they are running in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to discuss them in two separate podcasts. So the feedback for Destiny Calling will be due on Wednesday the 7th at 6 p.m., and for Heavy Dirty Soul on Thursday the 8th at 6 p.m.
Right.
So definitely. Keep that tucked away.
Yeah, yeah.
In your head. That's June. Yeah. June 7th and yes. June 8th.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It looks like they were filmed as two separate episodes, and then they decided, okay, we're going to do a grand finale of having 2 hours. And so, right.
they're airing them back to back.
Right.
But we're going to be discussing them in two separate episodes.
Yeah, because we want to give you the best. You know, we want to give time to discuss both. So.
That's right. They might come out near the same time. Mind you, but we're going to record them separately, so you have an extra day to get in your feedback for the second half of also, we have news that Fox has announced that Gotham will be moving to Thursdays at 8 p.m., so we're not going to have conflicts with other shows, which means my Mondays are not quite as crazy next season. And Timeless is also going to be later in the year, so it's going to be closer to the summer, I'm guessing.
I like it because one of the fun things about the GSM shows is the reaction threads while the shows are going on. And so with Gotham not being on the same time as Supergirl, I get to participate live instead of delay.
Yeah, and I can do that too. So far, I haven't really done much of anything because I don't like to play favorites. You know, I'm part of both podcasts and I don't really want to participate in either if I can't participate in both of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't do live tweeting very much either unless I just happen to be doing something. So this time now I can because Supergirl will be on Mondays and Gotham will be on Thursdays. So yay. They're not conflicting. My week is not going to be quite as crazy. And then Timeless will be shifted to, it looks like late spring or early summer.
Yeah.
So I'll get that, you know, a little time delayed. Shades of Under the Dome, I guess, because that was on in the summer. and I won't have Orphan Black next year because Orphan Black, this is its last season as well.
But the another good thing about the move to Thursday nights is Fox has confirmed that the X-Files will be back around the same time into January and in the same time slot, so Mondays at 8. So with that, looks like for the first time since season one, Gotham will have a normal season run.
Right. Most likely it will. Let's put the caveat on there.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, we haven't heard anything differently, but correct. You know, that's the way it's looking right now. Right. So
and the fact that they announced when X-Files was means they very well should have announced if Gotham was going to take a long break. So, and they didn't say anything. So that's nice. It looks like they're just moving it to a new slot in order to give it its full run at a normal time slot. And Thursday's a great night.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is because the way that the DC shows are spaced out now, there's not really the overlap that we had before. And like I said, I like the Thursday night time slot because it's I think it'll be a good spot for it.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. It does kind of overlap with another DC show, but it's okay. It's, you know, not that big a deal. You know, it's time shifted viewing anyway. So I'm good with it. I'm happy that it got moved. So good news for everyone, I hope. With that, we leave you with that lovely piece of news, and we will talk to you next week.
That's right.